As a starting point for this discussion, we thought it might be useful to just highlight some motivations and currently some open problems in the connections between physics and not homology. And potentially things relating to gauge theories and all the things we discussed last week. But also more generally, what open problems are and what people are interested in. I think there are quite a few of us in this discussion who have studied various aspects of not homology with physics motivation. I've sort of asked Ben to say some general things to get us started, and we can all jump in. And if you would like to jump in, just please unmute.
All right, great. Well, you know, for me, I would kind of put the biggest questions under two kind of frameworks. One framework, which I, you know, have to admit, I find very difficult, but which I think is very interesting, is, you know, what does non-homology tell us about geometry? So knot theory has ended up in this kind of like strange spot where there's certain invariants, like for example, the volume of a hyperbolic metric on the complement of a knot, which have very obvious geometric meaning. And there are others which very much don't. And quantum invariants like Jones polynomial are examples of ones that don't. And we often get kind of tantalizing hints about connections between these two things. So maybe the most tantalizing would be this volume conjecture, which relates the volume of the complement of a hyperbolic knot to certain limit of its Jones, color Jones polynomials. And this sort of idea is very tantalizing, but usually from the way, you know, if you learn the Kaufman bracket definition of the Jones polynomial, you see absolutely no connection to hyperbolic geometry. And similarly, if you, you know, go learn the original, Havanov's original definition of Havanov homology, you don't see any obvious connection to the geometry of the knot. So I think kind of making that connection is one of the kind of big mysteries in knot homology, one of the most exciting directions in which to progress. The other I would put in kind of connecting different constructions. So one of the things that has kind of bedeviled knot homology from the beginning of the subject is that there are actually kind of too many different constructions running around. You know, for example, lots of different ways of constructing Bonhoeffer homology, lots of different ways of constructing Hompley homology. And, you know, it sometimes takes a bit of work to see the connection. And we actually have made some very good progress here in terms of, let's say, for kind of the SLN homologies, so the generalizations of the Jones polynomial of Havanov homology to SLN, which is often called Havanov-Rozdansky, but that can be potentially confusing because the Hompley homology was also introduced by Havanov and Rozdansky. We actually have very good tools for doing this. Almost all of the constructions which exist out there can be unified by thinking about skew-how duality. And this is somehow, I think, a result which is not as well known as it should be, in part because there was kind of a paper that described the approach and then like five different papers showing that it worked for five different ways of thinking about epistemology. But, you know, I think, for example, for Walmsley homology, it's a bit less clear what the underlying framework is. And, you know, I think we're getting much closer, but for a long time, there was this kind of deep mystery of why Walmsley homology was coming up in, you know, this work on Hilbert schemes and Chrebnik algebras. And part of what was lacking there was kind of good tools for identifying something as Walmsley homology, like we have with the skew-Howe duality for SLI. That's my spiel. Does anyone have any questions, or do Tudor or Lev want to add something? Oh, I'm out of frame again, aren't I?
Regarding the second problem, I may repeat a little bit what I said at the end of my second talk. So if I can share Tudor, if you could allow me to share the screen.
But the images.
Let's see.
Can we make Lev a co-host?
Sorry. Okay. Still. I think you made the wrong instance. Let me remove. There are two instances of me.
Oh, there are two Levs.
So now there is only one. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think I have the right functions.
Another message. Oh, no, perfect. Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
I ask the physicists in presence here, in particular, Davide and Tudor, to correct me if I say something wrong, which I will certainly do, given my limited understanding of this. So the reason why there are so many constructions, and one may even say annoyingly many constructions of link homologies, is that they are part of the general M theory, string theory setup. Oops, just a moment. My pen failed. String theory setup. And the theory possesses what is known as dualities, and there are many of them, or maybe similar dualities, which may be applied in different ways. And in each duality frame, as people call it, each duality frame produces its own, or maybe more than one, way of computing link homology. So if you want to understand why there are so many and how they're related, then inevitably you have to learn the basic rules of M theory and string theory dualities. And those rules are simpler than the big volumes on the details of the corresponding theory. So for young mathematicians who are present here, I would suggest that you learn at least the basics. This is, one might say, similar to periodic table for chemists. Periodic, and even actually, I would say much more than periodic table. It gives you specific rules and directions where to dig. So to be more specific, Witten, Waffa, and other people told us to look at the following setup. So it is 11-dimensional. Let's begin with M theory. So they say that one has to consider a 3-dimensional Kolobiev cross something hyperkähler cross, let's say, R or a circle. And there may be variations on this subject. As hyperkähler, the first choice is what's known as Taubnat, which is the same as C2 or T star C with a funny geometry, with a funny metric, which is not important for us if, again, it depends on some choices, maybe not very important. For the 3-dimensional Kolobiev, there are two choices. One is the cotangent bundle to S3, which is given the structure of algebraic variety, and it's known as deformed conifold. And the other is local P1. So it's O minus one cross O minus one bundle over P1. Oops, over P1. Well, sorry, should say, sorry. So it's this deformed conifold, whatever, with the fiber of two O minus, well, I should say the total space of two O minus ones. That's what I mean, over P1. So if you, let me call this the Witten side for brevity, and this will be the Waffa side. It's interesting to introduce other variations on this subject. For example, changes free for something such as a cylinder cross R. So on this side, you first of all have to introduce M plus N, M5 brains. So an M5 brain is a physical object which vibrates and moves and vibrates. Think of it as ether, which supports, whose vibrations give us electromagnetic waves. So these brains wrap S3, the zero section, and they wrap a cigar, which is one of the C's of the Taubnat, and they wrap R1. So each brain decides which cigar of this, which C in that C2, which is C cross C, which one to pick. This C2, by the way, has an action of two C stars, which rotate those Cs independently. So if you want to maintain that symmetry, you have to wrap it either on one or on the other, so it stays invariant with respect to the rotations. And Witten explains that in this setup, so what do we want to compute? We want to compute the vibrations of that cigar. So if you assume that S3 is small, then you end up with a five-dimensional theory on Taubnat cross R with the cigar, which is physical object of space-time dimension three. And the goal is to study the vibrations of that cigar, and not all of them, which will be very hard, but only the special ones, which are called BPS. So the goal is to study BPS particles on the cigar. And that will be related the Chern-Simons invariant of S3, for example. Vafa says that you could do a Hannifold transition, so replace T star S3 by these two O minus ones over P1. And then the M5 brains will disappear and they will be recorded as a volume of P1 or maybe imaginary volume. Here again, I have to ask physics experts to correct me. So on the left, you have a particular choice of the gauge group, a supergroup GLMN related to which lives this gauge field lives on the zero section of T star S3. On the buffer side, it's gone. So all the constructions of link invariants and Chern-Simons invariants, which are based on the choice of the group, such as the Reshetnikin-derived formula involving R matrix must happen on, or the Chern-Simons theory itself must happen on the Witten side. On the other hand, the constructions where you first get an invariant which depends continuously on the N in the SLN gauge group, such as the Homfli polynomial, happen on the buffer side. So in those constructions, you first get something where N appears as a variable or as a free parameter, and then you specify it to a particular integer value at the end of your construction. If this is how you get it, for example, our work with Misha Kovanov on matrix factorizations and link homology is exactly of that kind. You first get the triply graded Homfli, and then you bring in a differential at the very last step. So that construction originates on the buffer side. So here you have the initial explanation of the miracles or systematization of the miracles of the link theory. So a very nice variation of the Witten setup was suggested by Mina Ganagic. So one of her suggestions is to replace S3 by an infinite cylinder. You may call it C star with the appropriate metric cross R. So this is, again, very, in this setup, it's relatively easy to do certain kind of string calculations, and that will lead you to Nakajima varieties. For a weight space, for a particular weight subspace in the tensor product of fundamental representations of GLN. From where you can, so if you study, for example, zero weight subspace, from there you can deduce by the Reshetnikin-derived kind of formula with cups, caps, and R matrices, you can deduce the value of your link invariant. But the reason why I mention it is that in that setup, which again happens on the Witten side, you can also see the envelopes, which are the center of the interest of Andrei Akunkov, who spoke in the previous week. And so one has to recognize where his parameters are in this same setup, which positions of the brains are controlled by, how do they call it, spectral and dynamic parameters or Kähler and equivariant parameters, and what's the ordering of the spins in the picture that people who like exactly solvable models where this sits. So to wrap this up, if you understand the details of both setups, then you know how to place these many constructions involving, in particular, involving actual topological braids and the exactly solvable model type crossings where our matrix depends on parameters, how you join everything into a single picture. By the way, the envelope story is how dual to our topological story. So they both exist in the same setup. You do not have to use any duality. They coexist there, but they represent the how dual sides of the same story. Okay, I should stop here.
Can I ask you to add some, you've drawn this out so beautifully. Can I ask you to add the brains corresponding to a knot?
Oh, of course. I'm very sorry. So on the Witten side, suppose you have a knot or a link component sitting inside S3. So from there, you go to the conormal bundle over that knot in T star S3, which is again Lagrangian in that Calabi-Yau. And then you consider M5, which is supported on that conormal bundle to the knot. And on one of the two cigars, and on R. So that's how you bring in links in the picture. And of course, you need links to produce link homology and to produce the stable envelopes. And so my personal goal is to, and hope is to understand all the details where link homology and Akunkov's stable envelopes exist within the same picture and how they interact with each other.
So Lev, I mean, if I'm going to connect to stable envelopes, I have to somehow be seeing the vacua in that Nakajima quiver variety in this picture. So are you going to tell me another brain corresponding to one of those?
So let me show you where the envelopes reside from the point of view of those who like Chern-Simons. Mina uses a cigar. A cigar is a elongated, which doesn't matter for topologists, sphere. That sphere has two holes because it's a cylinder. So now imagine that this sphere is a part of S3 in the Chern-Simons setup. It's pierced by two lines which carry let me tell you the SU2 version of the story to make it simple. So here you have two lines which carry two representations of SU2 of highest weight, which is a variable, in fact. So let's assume that these are high dimensional representations. In fact, there are variables. And here sit the usual two-dimensional representations, which I will call V1. And I'll put just two. So what is the space that you associate to this setup? The space, so in Chern-Simons, you associate a vector space to a two-dimensional surface which is pierced by link components. So the space is the same as the space of invariance of SU2 invariance in the tensor product of all the representations here. So if alpha is large enough, then this space is the same as the space as the tensor product of two representations, sorry, as the weight subspace in the tensor product of two two-dimensional representations. The weight corresponding to alpha prime minus alpha. So there is this amazing coincidence. The way you identify invariants with V1 and V2, with the vectors in V1 and V2 is by, for example, observing what happens when you do tensor products. You expand them into irreducibles. So here, for example, you will get V of alpha plus one plus V of alpha minus one. So the choice of the irreducibles in the tensor product corresponds to the choice of vectors in the first V1. That's how you identify, or one way. Now, the alpha that you see here is the spectral parameter of the R matrix of the envelopes. The envelopes themselves correspond to the following. In order to produce a particular vector space, in the vector space of a sphere, you may consider a ball, a free ball, whose boundary is that sphere. So inside that ball, you will have a line which goes from V alpha to V alpha prime. And then inside the ball, you will have, for example, two simple lines which go to V1. So I draw these crossings in the Kaufman-Lins paper style. So when I have a big line called Vn, I mean by that n lines carrying V1 with a projector on the highest weight representation. So now one line going sideways means it splits and you lose the value one in the value of the highest weight. So this picture here represents one of the envelopes of Okunkov. The second envelope will show if you put a positive or negative, let's say negative crossing on that braid. And again, this sits inside a ball, which bounds a free sphere. So the pictures are completely within the realm of Chern-Simons. Nevertheless, they produce the envelopes that appear in Okunkov's story. For the Nakajima variety, which in this case is a T star of P1. So we are neighbors with Okunkov. We just have to break the wall separating us. But again, keep in mind that he's viewing it from a dual perspective. What's a braid for us is a wild group for him. And what's the wild group for us is the actual braiding for him. So his R matrix depends on alpha as a parameter, this Q to the alpha will enter his R matrix, because if he wants to switch to a different set of envelopes, then he has to switch the order in which braids. So you see, generally here, if you have more than two V1s, you have to either first split them positively and then split them negatively, and then put a positive, short positive braid. So this will give you one family of envelopes. So I think the other family should come, again, this is kind of conjecture, but seems to be true. If you put them this way, and then put a short positive or negative braid. So for him, it's a story about SLN with two fundamentals. And he switches the fundamentals from our point of view by changing the order in which they split. So we're somewhere very close. It just the question is how to make this all physically rigorous.
Thank you, Beth. I might add a few things. Sort of zooming out again in broad terms and connecting the things you said with what Ben said, since we're summarizing a bit here. Reminding ourselves of where things stand. So Ben had this motivation number one. About formulating knot homology in a way that is manifestly geometric, particularly manifestly three-dimensional. So something about manifolds and actual knots in free space. I think like physics has now multiple proposals for something like that, and what seems to be missing is really some first principles. Mathematical definitions of physics objects, which is really sort of was one of the themes of our first week and kind of the previous incarnation of this conference. Sort of taking twists of field string M theory and writing down mathematically what those theories look like, so that one can then produce mathematical definitions of various vector spaces, categories, and whatnot. Just to review briefly, connecting to what Lev said. So this in this setup involving M theory on T star, yes, for knots, when we look at T star S three, but we can also generalize that to other three manifolds. And T star S three times R. So Gukov, Schwartz, and Vafa said, look, kind of like counting BPS states in M theory on a geometry like this with some M five wrapping is left side S three times cigar. I'm sorry. said counting BPS states should produce knot homology. Dunfield, Gukov, Rasmussen gave some constructions and predicted quickly graded, well, on the resolved common fold side, predicted graded knot homologies. And there have been many, many computations in examples, making some approximations on the physics side, or like seeing some patterns and making some clever on the data. But there's still, as far as I know, please correct me if I'm wrong, like no mathematical definition of this. And if there was, then there would be a geometric mathematical definition of cosmology.
That's a useful comment that it's really unlikely that you can give a precise mathematical definition of construction both in anterior string theory as opposed to the quantum field theories.
Yes, that's coming next. Great. So given what Davide just said, like this is likely to be hard. One can, for example, look at an effective field theory on these five rings. And that leads to several things. So this led from one perspective to Witten's proposal in the paper involving five rings and not homology, maybe about eight of them, that tried to define not homology in terms of counting solutions to some PDEs, right? So if we look at this in five frame, and the effective theory is in a 62 comma zero theory, which is still a bit mysterious. And then he took this cigar, it's probably really small, and compactified the circle of the cigar and got a 5D theory on a C, or in general, three manifold times half time times time, and said, well, we should count solutions to these. And basically what he said, let me say better, was let's quantize the Hilbert space of this theory on M times R plus times time, find BPS states in the Hilbert space, which means cohomology of some differential, and then try to express that in analytic geometry. And got some PDEs, which whose modulized cases of solutions were not obviously nice things. There is some follow-up work with Matteo, and I don't actually know the full end of the story, and whether this has been turned into a fully mathematical definition. Anyone online knows, please share. The other place you could go in field theory, or one other place, there are many, is to try to get rid of M and produce a theory on cigar times R that's a 3D n equals 2 theory that BDTD correspondence is called T of M on cigar times time. And this is the setup for lots of things, but the proposals of Gukov, K, Putrov, and Vafa, and then a lot of follow-up work categorifying WRT invariants as three manifolds. There are some choices to be made in doing that involve the infinity, involves the boundary of this space. And again, there are lots of computations in various families of examples, but this also still needs a mathematical definition. Those are the one of the words that comes up here is homological blocks, or particular case of partition functions on cigar times time. So anyways, there still needs a math definition, but this thing, the hard part here is understanding G of M for general M, or what would how would this be modified with, say, extra brains corresponding to a knot stuck in here. That is the really hard part. Understanding the mathematics of 3D n=2 theories is one of the things we discussed last week, and that's actually getting to be feasible. That's the first main thing I wanted to add. There's another fun open problem that I think maybe we'll discuss tomorrow, the discussion on the 3DA model. So not relating to the geometry side, but rather so the other option is to make choices and say express your knot as the closure of a braid, or take a planar projection of your knot. And in the computations of Mina's and that Lev mentioned in the Oblomkov-Rozanski story that Lev talked about last week, in all of these, and in Davide and Edward's work, there are clever choices of projections or polarizations or presentations of the knot made that allow in physics and in math some more concrete computations. The computation that Lev mentioned last week involving two categories of the 3D list, the 3DB model. There are some two categories that showed up here. Should have a 3D mirror dual. That is only partially understood. So the work, the joint work with Lev that he mentioned last week, describes some aspects of computations in the 3DA model, but a thing that's still missing is getting a brain action in endomorphisms of some object in a two category. And this is hard and maybe, well, hard but interesting, and maybe good motivation for what Justin and Ben Gamage are going to discuss tomorrow in a mathematical formulation of the 3DA model. One application of this sort of work that's been going on here is just to get brain actions in categorical braid actions in an analytic way. Now I've been talking long. Any other thoughts or comments? What else?
I just said that you had to relate the effective by the picture with these categorical braid actions. What's going on is that you take, you're splitting M into a direction of evolution of the knot and a direction where the strands live, and a two-dimensional space. And then the two-dimensional space combined with that plus, you try to make it disappear. You try to compensate to it in some way, or to put back conditions that make it manageable. So things reduce to now R times R time, R evolution times R time. That's a place
of. Yeah, indeed. So like the full setup that I'm started with makes it obvious that whatever you can calculate from this, as long as it's well defined, will give you a knot invariant. Having a braid action and taking the trace of a braid does not obviously tell you you're going to get a knot invariant. And Lev spent a while last week discussing the Markov two moves that you need for that. They're really hard to prove in general. Sometimes they're not even true. Once you sort of break symmetry, like as Davide was saying, like the expression not as the closure of a braid, and that can allow you to take the physics and produce some actual math out of it. It's just not obvious that that math is going to lead to, say, not invariance or satisfying Markov too. Be nice to have.
Okay, what I was also trying to say is that you might not need to talk about physics anymore. Once you are in 5DTD world, that's reasonably mathematics.
Yeah.
And going from that to one of the two dual sides, I forget which one, should not involve mysterious deep dualities. It should just be a patient work of studying twisted quantum field theory in a mathematical language.
Unfortunately, some of us are not that patient. one of the things I've always kind of wondered about this Omphli story is, standing around and not moving legs actually fire faster. Anyways, one of the things that I've kind of wondered about for a long time is how to, for those of us who learned about Omphli homology as mathematicians, we all read Ivanov's paper, like after his papers with Lev, and we learned about this great category of Y modules. And like that category should be in this story somewhere. And it should be like wherever you have a break acting. Is there any hope of kind of getting that out of this story you were saying about having an evolution direction where your grade goes?
Lev probably say better. There is something very close.
I think there is a big mystery of why the Zergel bimodule technology works. If you want to see glimpse of the Zergel bimodules showing up, you can take the disks that we are drawing in this 3DB model versus 3DA model and cut the inner disk from it, turn it into an annulus and put an NS5, just put a single NS5 on the inner boundary. Then the flat graphs, so if you replace your braid with a flat graph, meaning no crossings, but some rearrangement of charges, you will get the Zergel bimodules on the nose. However, the actual crossings, if you try this with actual crossings, then they will turn not into complexes of Zergel bimodules, but in the complexes in derived category, which means that positive crossings will look the same as negative crossings. So they will become virtualized. And so this may be just the first step of the story. A big mystery of the Zergel bimodule and our matrix factorizations with Misha Kovanov is that they're very easily adapted to the so-called virtual knots, invented, I think, by Kaufman, mostly. So it was recognized that you can place knots, instead of placing them in a three-dimensional sphere, for example, you can place them in a thick two-dimensional surface. And there will be some funny rules and coincidences, which I would have to explain. So the funny thing is that virtual crossings are trivially adapted to the Zergel / matrix factorization story. It's very easy to guess what you put there. Somehow, the Reshetic and Turaev R matrix formula does not work for virtual crossings as far as I understand, although Kaufman bracket works. So there is some funny physics. This construction suggests that there must be a physics story where knots live in thick surfaces. And I don't, and if you understand that story, you would also, I guess, understand how to transition from, for example, things on Hilbert scheme that we do to the true Zorgel bimodules. Again, they're very close, but there is a big mystery. On the Zorgel side, you can construct virtual crossings, but they do not work on the, say, Hilbert scheme side or the Rishtikin-Turayev trace of braid side. So there is a big mystery to my mind.
Thanks for pointing that out.
I mean, if you try the simplest thing with virtual crossings for Rishtikin-Turayev, you would think that you put there a permutation instead of R matrix. That would make sense. However, the virtual Markov move would immediately fail because everything is designed for Markov move to work with the R matrix sitting at that crossing. So if you put a permutation, it doesn't work. Because the trace that you take is the quantum trace. There is this Q to the H. That's what kills it.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make sense in the category of quantum group representation.
Yes, that's the problem. But if you categorify with the help of Zorgel bimodules, then all of a sudden it works. It's a very strange situation.
Thanks, that's it. I'd like to discuss further, but I think for this discussion, let me ask again if anyone else has things to contribute or ask.
Is the NAMPOL boundary condition understood at all in the 3DA model?
Say better what you mean by that.
So a crucial part of Witten's construction, which I guess hasn't been mentioned in some detail, is that for the 5D PDEs on this manifold with boundary, you require a non-fold boundary condition. So I imagine there's some sort of reduction to three dimensions, let's say along some surface.
The 3D, just crowd in here. So the question's a little mysterious to me. The 3D model and 3DA models that appear here are world volume theories of the M2 brains that are the BPS states in M theory. So there are M2s that we didn't talk about, that, like, these are the vibrations from the perspective of time, how net times are. There are M2s that stretch between, as Lev calls them, the transignment brains and the not brains.
Mm-hmm.
So going down to the low volume of those M2s, you can see series. The difficulties of non-pole boundary conditions in the 5D PDEs are sort of turned over on their head, and they appear in I don't think that a priori is a difficulty in the 3D theories. But
okay, I was imagining it's just a different sort of
a very 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 different duality frame.
Okay. So what I was imagining was the following. So I take the M3 to be just a surface times R, right? And so I reduce the theory along the surface to get a 3DA model. And so the 3DA model will be in some target being some flat connections on a surface. And then there should be some 2 and 3D PDEs that Witten's equations are reduced to. And maybe I was thinking there's some construction like that. So I guess it's a different, what you meant by the 3DA model is different, is not that.
It's not the 4DA twist that's relevant. It's a twist of generic psi. And I can't very quickly say what we get in 3D when we do that compactification. It's a really good question to try to analyze it from that perspective. And do a twist compactification.
All right, yeah, we can.
That's a great, thing to do.
Yeah, thanks. We can discuss that more.
Well, I mean, you are.
It's similar to things you've thought about. And it's also like it's close to class S as well, right?
No, that's right. If you compare the Vanekamon surface,
it's class S.
You're doing class S on a cigar.
Exactly.
But it's still not, I mean, it's not, there is no obvious way to go from that to the 3D.
AMD. That's really unrelated.
That requires.
But it's similar to this.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's a demonstration, and
I was just gonna say when a thick and Riemann surface was mentioned in class S, one could think about things you get by. I mean, the not invariants can be realized in principle as frame-based degeneracies of certain lines. In the four-dimensional analytical Schubert series. That's phase talk. So these are quarter BPS lines in 4D equal 2, labeled by curves inside a thick and Riemann surface, and which are actually obtained by taking a surface defect with parameters which are points on the surface and evolving it and capping it.
Yeah.
Those are all potentially true to seven. So you could add the evolution of the knot as an evolution on a surface defect inside the Fodenical theory with caps and all of that. And that should also work.
Yes.
That would pick a very specific surface. And by the way, I'm very strongly tempted to take the surface to be a plane with one irregular singularity so that everything is living in the world of quantum groups. So the character variety of the plane with an irregular singularity at infinity is the class, the quantized character variety is basically the quantum group. So I don't know if this could be useful as a perspective. I don't know this work of Shapiro and Goose other. I think it might be inserted in the story at some point.
Thanks. That is another main query to explore and see about. Great. Awesome.
And that's also a categorical transfer that has not. There's also, categorical transport has not been quite looked at. Transporting the surfaces in 4D angle 2.
Well, right. So,
instead of boundaries in 3D angle.
Right. And so the setup in phase talk involved a circle compactification for the n equals 2 and these quantum algebras that appear and it was a computation like the frame BPS characters give a computation of not polynomials, not invariants.
But if you live in the world of
then we should exactly we should work at the holomorphic.
Well, the animal true holomorphic topological space, which is mathematically getting in there too, I think. Including not just line defects but surface defects, then you can get a categorical transport. I mean, the category of line defects in the Nicole Schutt homomorphic topological twist is more or less conjectured. If you could extend it to two category of surface defect, topological surface defects, then you could transport and the two category.
That sounds like an excellent problem.
Yeah, maybe we should put it a problem. Study the holomorphic topological twist for the theory associated to the plane with an irregular singularity. So that, you know, then the lines of the theory categorify elements of the quantum group. But still, it's pretty tricky to go from there to the other to the because it's not a two categorical transport. Although they should be the same two categorical transports in some moral sense. Maybe not just not only moral. It's just that somehow in this, maybe in this model, the thing on the bottom of the blackboard, this surface is taken to be a cylinder. Which regular singularities, which is relatively trivial for the Nicole theory. So you're left with just the surface defect somehow.
It doesn't sound horrible. Like taking a trace of that thing in the Brage direction, it leads to a 3D theory connects with given.
Yeah, please. So perhaps I still don't know if there is a good if the relation between the bottom of the blackboard and the 5D Witten stuff or the class S.
I mean, this is different. Like,
I don't know how. I don't know. You might have to pass to duality dualities which go out of the mathematical.
I'm afraid you would.
Mathematically clear universe. Unfortunately. You might have to go out of quantum field theory, that's what that. But, you know, as Mina saying, you know, little string theory plays a role in the bottom of the board.
Right. Yeah, so this is describing effective theory on defects in the other theories. And like part of the question is, like, I mean, there are ways to like,
yeah, but
reconstruct a neighborhood of a bulk theory on defects.
The defects are in the six-dimensional theory, the defects are two-dimensional. They're not three-dimensional. So you need to do something to make them three-dimensional, which is a duality. You know, you put the transverse compact circle with duality. The next step is probably out of quantum field theory work.
Cool. Well, our time's up. Thank you all for the discussion. I hope this is useful for any students who are still around. And yeah, thanks.